This is Radio Equalshock with your host, Alex Smith.
From Ottawa, Canada, Paul Beckwith, welcome back to Radio Equalshock.
Hello, Alex.
Great to get you again, Paul. Now, I called to discuss your three-part video on whether we can expect extreme heat events as the industrial shutdown lowers air pollution, and I think that could happen myself, and it is important. But first, you just blew me away by predicting Canada is not an oasis from the corona pandemic developing just south of the border in the States. You say Canadians made colossal blunders that could cost us dearly in weeks to come. Paul, why don't you begin by explaining that old adage from the Middle Ages about travel and the plague?
Yes, well, ancient knowledge says that if you're in your country and a plague comes, stay in your country, stay at home. And if you're in a foreign country and a plague comes there, then don't go home, stay where you are. That's an old, I think it's Arabic, I think it's from the Middle East. Yeah, it's really common sense, right? I mean, you don't want to bring plagues to other countries if it's in your country.
But that's not what we're doing at all. I mean, you noted that 1 in 37 Canadians, about 3% of the population, returned from March holidays from Florida or the snowbirds coming home from the U.S. Southwest and from their Mexican winter holidays. And as far as I can tell, none of them were tested or questioned or quarantined on their return. What is the risk for Canadians?
I think the risk is extremely high because, as we know, the U.S. has done totally inadequate and insufficient testing. They're scrambling to try to catch up now, but there were many, many people that were carrying the virus. You know, first of all, it's very difficult to stop it spreading globally because you can get it and you cannot have symptoms. You may never have symptoms or they may appear after a week. So how do you stop something like that with our global travel? There's over 1 million Canadians that returned to Canada, most by air, some by land across the border. It's over 1 million, and it was between March 10th and March 14th. And, you know, I'm sure many of these people are carriers, you know, whether or not they have the symptoms, and they brought it back to Canada. And, you know, over the next few weeks, we're certainly going to find out what happened. Now, Travelers, Trudeau's has been ratcheting up. You know, the Canadian government's been ratcheting up their restrictions, and they just today, maybe they watched my video, I don't know, yesterday, because today they put mandatory quarantine into place. I mean, there's reports of people hiding their symptoms so they could return back to Canada. You know, they're coughing and they were ill, but, you know, at the airport, they just squeeze through, don't cough when you're talking to the customs person, you know, load up on water or whatever and say you're perfectly fine and you get back into Canada. Of course, many people who were visiting for March break went down to, you know, beaches and so on. You could see all the people in Florida that were totally disobeying any physical separation. You know, they crowded the beaches, and I'm sure there are many young Canadians there. You know, young people, for a start, they don't feel the same risk that, you know, older people do. And it turns out that many young people are getting just as sick, and, you know, the strains of the virus are changing and so on. So Trudeau's been urging Canadians to come back, and they closed the border last week, but that excluded Canadians. Canadians could just come back. So, you know, the government needs to track and find out, get a handle on all those people and where they are, and that's not happening, right? These people are told to self-isolate for 14 days, but my mother-in-law in Oshawa, she said, oh, a friend of hers just drove back from the U.S. about a week ago and stayed at home for a couple of days and was at the grocery store and called my mother-in-law and said, hey, let's get together. And my mother-in-law said, well, where have you been? She said, oh, I've been to the grocery store. I've been on hikes. I've been to my bridge club. I've done this and that. And my mother-in-law said, well, wait a minute, you're supposed to be self-isolating for 2 weeks. And this woman, you know, elderly woman said, oh, you know, I don't feel perfectly fine. I don't have anything. I'm invulnerable. You know, I'm healthy. I take my vitamins. And, like, you know, no concern for anybody else, right? So I think we're in trouble. I mean, even if those people all stay home and self-isolate, a certain fraction of them will get sick and will go into hospitals, and a fraction of 1 million people is enough to overwhelm hospitals wherever they go. So, you know, areas where they come back, I think there's an awful lot from Ottawa. There's a lot in Toronto. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot all over. But, I mean, the March breakers that go down to the U.S., a lot of them drive, a lot of them fly, and then they come up And they're in Toronto, they're in Montreal, they're in cities all across Ontario and Quebec. We're in trouble. I mean, we haven't heeded this ancient wisdom at all.
Do you really think, though, that Canada could experience horrors similar to what Italy has now, but delayed by a few weeks?
Well, if a hospital system gets swamped, then the death rate is enormous. I mean, if you consider that maybe 20% of patients, get symptoms, and, you know, if 10% go in the hospital, 5% need ICU, you know, and if a couple percent need the respirators and things, then those 5% that are critically ill will die, and they won't get the help, so most of them will die. I mean, we're talking about swamping the hospital system by a factor of 10 or something, you know, unless resources can appear to meet the demand. But our hospital systems are not, how can they be designed for plague? They can. They're designed for normal operation. And we know that they're stretched to the limit already. You hear stories of people waiting 6-7 hours in emergency, and this was months ago before there was any sign of the pandemic. So, you know, it doesn't, logically, I mean, it just doesn't look good. Now, we've learned, hopefully, some stuff from Italy. I mean, we're all under lockdown, more or less, right now. I mean, Trudeau needs to go the last step and declare an emergency. I'm sure he'll do that within a few days. But, you know, him encouraging people to come back without the monitoring, without the tracking and stuff, it's just asking for trouble. I mean, he's done a lot of things right, but this was a major blunder. You know, and I think we're going to pay for it in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, we'll see. We don't have to wait very long to see if that happens or not. But I don't see, I mean, how can it not happen? There's so many cases in the U.S. that are undiagnosed. This thing's been going around for a while.
Well, you know, and I have to feel a little sorry for us human beings because we're going through such a wrenching change, and so many people just can't make that change fast enough to suit this disease. I saw a feature on the local news in the Okanagan Valley of British Columbia, and a man from the building trade said construction workers are essential workers, so they have to keep coming to work and building new condo towers in downtown Kelowna. And my God, there's nothing essential about that. And then the local farm lobby just got the Canadian government to allow 100,000 guest agricultural workers, mostly from Mexico, to come in too. We're not taking this seriously in Canada.
No, we're not. And there's I heard that there was 15,000 people in India, Canadians in India, that are anxious to come back as soon as possible. Right. And, you know, the snowbirds that have been down in Florida for months and months and months on end, you know, mingling with all of the population. This thing's been going around for a while. Yeah, we're going to be hit hard, you know, about letting in the Mexican farm workers. I mean, that's absurd. What about all the Canadians that are out of work right now? Why don't they can do the jobs in the fields if needed in the spring? We don't need to bring in 100,000 Mexicans. I'm sure there'd be lots of people that would be willing to just, you know, they're bored at home. The crucial response to this virus is the great article by Thomas
Poyo, yes,
called "Coronavirus: the Hammer and the Dance." And you know, we need to hammer for 3 to 7 weeks. You know, cut the exponential growth, get the R value, spreading value less than one, so it tapers off, and then we can ease up and get, you know, the economy start up again. But monitoring the R value, and as soon as you know, if there's breakouts, then you taper back again and you suppress it, and so that's the dance part, right? But the hammer part now is what we need to do, and that doesn't involve letting in 100,000 people from Mexico to work in the field. It doesn't mean letting 15,000 people come back from India. You know what it means is that we stop travel, we stop a movement of people from countries, and people have to stay in place and weather it, and different places will fare differently, but we can't just keep spreading it. Like, I mean, Canada's cases, I just updated it. We gained 500 cases, total confirmed cases yesterday, and we're on track for gaining about the same now. Our latest number is 3,588. Italy is about 1,000 behind China. And that's a 2:34 p.m. today, Eastern Time update, March 26th from the Johns Hopkins virus map. Make sure, you know, people should Google that and have a look. It's real-time data, essentially. The U.S. will be they'll be in the lead. Trump will be cheering, and, you know, in a few days. We're not as good as I thought we'd be because of all of these people. I mean, in China, ironically, they had the Chinese New Year, right? There's something like 330,000 Chinese people that live in Italy, about four or five years ago, there's about 60, 70,000 people that work in the luxury garment industry, you know, fancy handbags, clothes, et cetera, in Italy, the high fashion. And many of them went back to China for the Chinese New Year and then went back to Italy quickly before borders were shut down. And this is why Italy has had such a hard time of it from these outbreaks. It was spread. So now what is Canada doing? We've done exactly the same thing by only instead of 60,000 people crossing a border, it's 1 million people crossing a border, plus more people coming. So, you know, that broke Italy, what I described with the 60,000. And we have 1 million people coming across from America, and untold numbers of those people will be carrying the virus. So I hope Trudeau's thing is retroactive. It didn't sound like it to me. He said anybody now crossing the border has to self-quarantine by law and they'll be traced and stuff. What about the people that came back a week ago? They're supposed to be in another week of quarantine, and there was nothing in the announcements today about that. So I don't know what advice he's getting, but if he had some good microbiologists and virologists advising him, I mean, they have to be in charge right now.
By the end of the summer, though, Paul, we may see more internal migration in North America and perhaps in other countries as the economy collapses and families are forced to consolidate to wherever they think they can best survive what could be a long-term depression, maybe worse than the 1930s. My own kids may move back in here where our home is paid for and we can grow some food. If that internal migration happens, I think we can expect the disease to move with it. What are your thoughts, Paul?
Absolutely. The disease will move with key. You know, it's a game of probabilities, right? I mean, the less people that you have close contact with, the better. So, you know, Canadians that are living alone and don't have family, you know, they have the best chances of getting through this without getting sick, right? But most of us, you know, you have kids. You know, who's not going to take a son or daughter home, right? You know, that wants to come back, you know, that has no money to pay for the rent wherever they are. Who's not going to take them in? Families will risk getting sick, but it's only one person or two people that they're talking about. So hopefully, so it's a matter of statistics. It's a matter of probabilities. I mean, there is risk with that, but it's low. Hopefully your son or daughter that you're taking back has been taking these self-isolation precautions, et cetera. We don't have a sense of control. You know, this virus is coming. We're kind of hunkered down. You know, if you have stocks in the stock market, they've collapsed and your life has completely changed. You know, the biggest complaint in Italy is not about the quarantine, is that, you know, people are forced to sleep with their own spouses.
I like a little bit of humor. Well, with that, I'd like to switch to the subject that you and I know best, climate change, which turns out has some relationships here. Now, Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just announced a $15 billion bailout package for the Canadian oil and gas sector, which is tanking. The tar sands operations are bleeding money daily. Alberta crude is selling for about $5 a barrel, about the price of a cup of coffee, and they can't produce it for four times that much. Despite the need for support from the Greens to keep on governing, it sounds to me like Trudeau's Liberals are committed to continuing to wreck the climate and not to save it, even now when we have this little chance. What do you think?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling that they're doing this. I mean, you know, they bought the pipeline. I mean, they're just making so many mistakes. Like, governments are like deers in headlights. You know, they're just reacting. I mean, you know, if Trump goes and opens the economy in the U.S., I don't think he can. I don't think the states will go for it. You know, this is what he's saying. I think, and the doctor, his head doctor there is not saying too much because he knows, you know, given it every day, you know, the cases are going to go up 35% or 40% in the U.S. So in a couple of days, 2, 3 days, 4 days, everything becomes so clear. I mean, this is the exponential function, which none of those politicians understand. You know, I had higher hopes for Trudeau. I thought he was a smarter guy, but he's just as he's as dumb as a sack of bricks, just like the rest of the politicians. He talks a good game, but to put that type of cash into an industry, you know, that money should be going into renewables. I mean, renewables are still operating, you know, the solar farm. I mean, in fact, solar power is setting record levels of production because the sky is so clear now, right? So, you know, this, right? So solar efficiencies are way, way up. for solar, and you know, winds is doing very well, and all these things. I mean, that money needs to be going into that. If Trudeau had any sense, you know, many people expected more from him. But after he bought the pipeline, we saw what he was really like, what the Liberal Party was really like, and you know, at least he says he follows science, but he follows the science that he wants. What we're going through is we're going through like what. You know, we've been talking about climate change and the risks to society and stuff, and it's been abrupt climate change. It's accelerating faster and faster. So now take that time scale and crank it up like 100 times or something. Instead of things happening in, you know, a decade, say, which is 120 months, they're happening in 3 months. So accelerate the time scale. So I call it coronavirus time compression. Like think what you were doing a month ago or 3 weeks ago, and it seems like it was 2 years ago and a year ago. You know what I mean? Like our sense of time is just because things are changing exponentially with the virus, and countries are reacting very, very quickly, you know, when they're usually very, very bureaucratic and lethargic, but they're acting fairly quickly, still not quickly enough, as I'm saying. You know, the hammer and dance needs to be done in every country immediately. You know, I think back a week ago, and it seems, you know, crazy. It seems more like a month or 2 months or a year ago. That's just me. I don't know.
No, I'm totally experiencing that. A day now is a month at any other time. And a Reddit post said, funny how everything they said was too extreme to do for climate change is done in an instant for COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're talking about the green plan in the U.S., you know, $1 trillion or $2 trillion of costing, and they pump that into the stock market in a day, and it still drops 1,000 points that day. So the U.S. is completely ill-equipped to deal with this, and they're going to be, if they get away with only 500,000 or, you know, 1 million or 2 million deaths, I think they're doing about the best they can do now. You know, if there were 10 million deaths, you know, when it's all over in the U.S. or 12, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I just, you know, it's very dire stuff, but unless they get their act together, they need to get Trump out of there. They need to run the country from medical experts. Most presidents would just step aside and let the experts, you know, take over, but not him, right? He's the genius. He knows more than any experts, and he's going to do what, like, he's going to try to do what he's going to do and be responsible directly for millions of deaths in the country. I mean, that's what it's got to in the U.S.
Meanwhile, though, as you've written about and done videos on, some apologists for the oil industry claim we must keep burning fossil fuels or the world will experience severe heat. They say global dimming is protecting us, and so we need pollution to do that. You looked into this with 3 YouTube videos. Tell us about that issue, Paul, and what you found.
I think we'll be able to pin down the numbers of how actually strong the global dimming is effect because of the virus. You know, it looks like, I mean, with China shutting down a quarter of their industry, reducing their emissions by a quarter, you know, you can calculate the temperature, but you have to know if industry stopped overnight, what would the temperature rise be? Right? How much of the aerosols leave the atmosphere? They're rained out within a week, and then more sunlight hits the earth, more can escape to space at night. So the daily temperature range increases. Or, and there was a study around for 9/11. Planes didn't fly for 3 days, and the daily temperature range seemed to increase about a degree, half a degree warmer in the day and half a degree cooler at night because of the lack of the contrails. Of course, that's one factor of industry shutting down. You know, flights greatly reduced, so that factor is still there. We would expect more daily temperature range with fewer with the aircraft industry shuttered. But then it's the low level aerosols from industry, and the best number that I could see from scientific consensus was about half a degree, the total effect. But it varied between about 0.25 and 1.1 degrees Celsius. So if you take the half a degree number and you shatter a quarter of global industry, you could argue it's about a quarter of a half a degree, which is about 0.125 degree Celsius temperature rise globally increase. That would, of course, be double on land and about half of the oceans. And then if you add, those are the direct effects from the aerosols, but then there's also the cloud physics. You know, aerosols act as cloud condensation nuclei to the water vapor clings to them and grows and you get the particles, so cloud formation depends on that. And then if there's more aerosols, there can be more particles that are smaller, and then you can get more clouds, and that causes some of the cooling too. So maybe, you know, I doubt it would be double the effect of the direct effect, but if it was double, then we'd be talking about, you know, a rise of, half a degree at least on the land, maybe up to a degree, you know, short term. Even if it was half a degree, that's about 25 years of warming, you know, at the present rate, because we're warming globally. We're warming about 0.2 degrees per decade globally. Of course, it's way, way higher in the Arctic, as you know. And let's talk about the Arctic. Don't let me forget that, because there's some very interesting stuff coming there. But we'll find out. We should get a good grip. I mean, the studies that come out of this shuttering down of a big chunk of global industrial output, we'll be able to get the numbers on what this is. There'll be some studies that come out in a few months to a year, and then we'll know that what that number is. We won't have such a uncertainty, 0.25 to 1.1. We'll be able to pin it down. And most scientists think it's about 0.5, but it could be 1, could be closer to 1.
But you mentioned the Arctic. What do you think is happening there, and is this lack of global dimming going to affect the Arctic sea ice?
You know, temperatures this last winter in the Northern Hemisphere have been unbelievably, you know, warm. I mean, temperature anomalies 5 degrees Celsius over large parts of Europe and so on. And lots of people were saying, well, is this the effect coming in from the global dimming? But, you know, it was really there sort of late last year as well. So it's hard to really tease out what exactly is causing it, but we know, you know, apart from the general trends, but some people have pointed out to me, and I'll do a video hopefully later today about it, is, there's a couple things. One is the temperature, is the seasonality of the virus. As it warms up, will the transmission go down significantly? There's a very interesting paper I found from a few years ago, and I'll do a video on that today as well. But the jet streams, interestingly enough, the polar vortex over in the Northern Hemisphere is not centered over the Arctic right now. It's centered over the center of Greenland. And that probably rings a bell with you because, you know, it was at least a year and a half ago, I did a video and I was talking about how I expected that to shift over Greenland as we lost more and more sea ice, because Greenland would then be the new center of cold, and the center of Greenland is at 73 degrees north, which is offset from the North Pole 17 degrees, right, to the south. And now the problem with that is when it is offset, when it's circling the Arctic, it contains the cold air. The jet stream kind of acts as a wall. The cold, dry air is north of it, you know, in the Arctic, and the warmer, humid air is south. And when the jet stream becomes very wavy, you get the cold air excursions far south and the warm air excursions up in the Arctic, causing warming of the Arctic. That's been a big feedback for accelerated warming of the Arctic. But now, if the jet stream actually stays in the position it's in now, the polar vortex, and it's locked over Greenland, then it's completely offset from the pole, 17 degrees. Each cycle of rotation, if you like, is bringing cold air pretty far south and warm air pretty far north. If you look at the sea ice extent, you know, it always peaks in March. It peaked early this year. It peaked March 3rd, I believe. And if you look at what's happened since then, it's dropping off a cliff. You know, it's plummeting. I mean, we're having drops of 150,000 square kilometers a day, 200,000 square kilometers a day, and that's unheard of for this time of year. I mean, we've just passed the peak. If you Google Arctic sea ice graphs and go to the Arctic Sea Ice Forum, you know, there's a lot of comments. A lot of people are wondering what the heck's going on. And I think the jet stream is now rotating about a different location, center of mass, if you like, or center of rotation, which is centered square over Greenland. You know, if this continues, then I think the probability of blue ocean event this year would be very, very high if this continues. I'm not making a prediction about it that it's going to happen this year. I'm just saying what I see.
Yes, even while we hide in our homes somewhat fearfully, most of us, last week the United Nations said they were postponing their climate activities to focus on the current pandemic, and that is understandable, and you and I are kind of doing that too. But as you say, the temporary clearing of the air is not going to stop the warming of this planet. The poles will keep melting, sea levels will keep rising, we will have severe weather again and again. Can we afford to take a few months or even a year or two off from the battle to contain the pandemic of climate change?
You know, we tend to react when things are right in our face, you know, and this virus is certainly right in our face. People know people that are getting sick. And in fact, when I was in Madrid for the COP25, I got extremely sick the first week of December and just read a report. An Italian doctor was saying there were lots of cases of people having very unusual symptoms and getting sick back then. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it was a strain of the virus circulating already. You know, maybe I have an immunity already. I'd like to get tested and at least find out, you know, the antibodies and see if there is something. Maybe I have, you know, we're probably wishful thinking, but maybe I have an immunity to it because I had the thing back in December, you know, if it's related. I think we should remind people that self-care is very, very important, more important than ever. You know, make sure you get proper sleep, take vitamin. Vitamin C is supposed to be good. Vitamin D is excellent. I spend about half my time these days outside. And for me, you know, I do with my home office, things haven't changed too much for me. Things haven't changed too much. In fact, I have my kids and my wife around during the day. So I'm not the only one in the house, in the home office, right? So I could argue that things have actually improved for me, right?
That's bizarre. You know, I got somewhat energized by this, and I went out and did a lot of things that I have been meaning to do for years. I got a couple of solar panels, and I did some canning and cleaned up my act. So it can be motivating rather than depressing.
It is. I mean, what it's telling us is that, I'm fitting so much into it each given day now because you never know. Well, you could catch it, and it puts more urgency on your life and doing things, and trying to be productive doing something. I mean, you know, you and I, we've been trying to save the world for years from climate. Now we have this virus come along, and we've switched somewhat because it's a much more urgent thing. But there's so many relations to climate, right? You know, we've come to accept that, you know, climate's been going to hell, but we want to, you know, it doesn't mean we're not going to try to improve things and change things. And it's almost like we're you and I and people that are very concerned about the environment and stuff. We've been through these things already before. It's like we're maybe a bit more resilient, maybe a bit more hardened. We haven't had our heads in the sand about anything at all. Right. So, you know, the initial shock with the virus, it's like, oh, my God, you know, I've been worried about climate, you know, and it's affected me and whatever. And then this thing comes along. It's like, how does one cope? But, you know, get out there and exercise. Do something you haven't done for years.
And love the one you're with. If you're with somebody. But, you know, we're going to have to wrap it up, Paul. We're running out of time. We have been speaking with Canadian scientist Paul Beckwith. You can find him at paulbeckwith.net, and by all means, subscribe to his YouTube channel to keep abreast of the latest developments. That's it for this show. Check out all our past programs free at ecoshock.org. Thank you for listening, and let's meet up again next week.